Thank you. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. We have six cases on our calendar today, four set for oral argument. This is our fourth and final one for oral argument. This is case number A23-0148, Deborah Jean Barrett Tuttle versus Jason James Tuttle. We are holding this oral argument via Zoom. This is being recorded, and that recording will be available within a few days. However, no other recordings are permitted. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent. And then counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. Counsel, when you begin, please state your name for the record and the party that you are representing. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Gerald Wallace for the appellant, Deborah Burnt Tuttle. Your Honor, Ms. Tuttle appears before the court with 10 assignments of error, raising issues of abuses of discretion in the areas of amount of spousal maintenance, issues of real estate division, valuation, division of assets based on a lack of tracing, division of debt, and failing to order valuation and division dates and appropriate award of attorney's fees. Addressing the issue of spousal maintenance first, Your Honors, the amount of...
Counsel, before you go through the 10 items, I just want to clarify that for each of these, the standard of review is an abuse of discretion by the district court, correct?
I agree, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, because if I recall correctly, you'd mentioned clear error and abuse of discretion, but standard of review is abuse of discretion for each of the alleged issues raised regarding the district court's decision. And that's a fairly heavy burden that you have to meet, because we generally give deference to the district court in terms of discretion to make decisions in these matters.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with that statement. A standard of review is abuse of discretion, and I would agree that generally the Court of Appeals has a deference to the trial court based on that review, Your Honor. But in this particular case, the position of the appellant is that there has been an abuse of discretion in the 10 ways that were assigned in the brief. Initially, the amount of spousal maintenance, Your Honor, requires the appellant to spend her property award in violation of the court's opinion in Curtis that finds that a party who's receiving spousal maintenance should not have to spend a property settlement to support oneself when they're a recipient of spousal maintenance. The findings in the district court supported the award that the appellant is seeking. She was seeking an award of $4,200 a month. The court awarded $2,500 a month. Court did make findings supporting a higher award, specifically finding that the respondent did have earnings in the amount of $14,000 per month, and that the appellant's reasonable needs were in the area of about $5,000 per month, and that her reasonable monthly income was $1,160 per month after the amended findings.
Were you asking Mr. Wallace for permanent maintenance?
We were, yes.
You know, one thing that I noticed in terms of the district court's award for $2,500 a month for 10 years was, well, first of all, in order for you to have argued permanent maintenance, wouldn't that have to assume that he was going to keep working past 65 at the same, you know, level of income he was doing, you know, which sort of went up and down a bit? I mean, how is that an abuse of discretion for the district court to say, well, no, it's going to end when he's 65, because presumably he wants to retire too? Or is your assumption for permanent maintenance that he was going to work forever?
The argument was for permanent maintenance, if I recall correctly, ending when he would turn 65, Your Honor, or it may have been 67. I'll defer to the appellant's addendum on on that.
Okay, so now we're arguing a difference between maintenance ending at 65 versus 67. How was that anything except within the court's discretion?
Excuse me, Your Honor. I guess what I'm asking for on the spousal maintenance issue is at the end of the day, a remand, because we believe the amount that was ordered was an abuse of discretion.
Okay, so it's not...
Sorry, Your Honor, you muted.
Well, it's not the length of the maintenance that you were... it's the number, the monthly amount.
Correct, Your Honor. as I was saying, the amount of maintenance being asked for was $4,200 a month. And that was supported by the district court's findings on income and ability to earn a living. Throughout the case, and I think this would go to your point, Your Honor, the respondent had made comments that his position was ending, that he wasn't going to continue in that line of work. But throughout the pendency of the case, there was never any evidence presented, and there hasn't been any evidence presented to indicate that that position would actually end and that he wouldn't be able to receive or he wouldn't be able to pay the maintenance that he was ordered to pay. And the issue is the amount, not the duration or the modifiability of the award that ended up being ordered, but the amount that was ordered, because the amount requires the appellant to spend the property award that she was given by the district court. Moving to issues of real estate division, the appellant testified credibly that there was significant non-marital funds provided by her that were placed into the home and aided with the refinancing of the home in several different instances. And the appellant is requesting that there be a remand to allow for a Schmitz calculation to determine if there is a, well, not if, but what is the amount of her non-marital equity in the marital home.
Counsel, are you talking about the $100,000 to $125,000 that she claimed that she provided?
Yes, well, wait a second. I think the $100,000 to $125,000 was the respondent's number. I believe that Ms. Tuttle, the appellant, provided documents, not bank statements, but check registers and oral testimony indicating that the number was closer to $78,000. I'll defer to the brief. There's a statement and a citation to the record as to what her testimony is.
Right. She testified that she had brought between $100,000 and $125,000 in cash to the relationship.
Okay.
Under the trial transcript. But this was, and you argue that she testified credibly to that, but isn't that really for the fact finder to determine whether or not she was in fact credible or not?
There was, I agree, Your Honor, and there was not a finding that she was not credible. So I would be arguing that she was credible and that those numbers are supported by the record versus what the respondent's argument is that those numbers are not supported by the record and that she was found to be not credible, which is...
Well, but isn't that implicit in the district court's ultimate determination that she was not credible by not crediting her that range, either $100,000 to $125,000?
I don't think that a finding of credibility and a lack of finding on the amount sought are necessarily credibility determinations, Your
Honor.
Well,
the district court didn't credit her $100,000 or $125,000, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I mean, you're challenging that on appeal, right?
Yes.
So the fact that the district court did not grant that, it seems to be an implicit finding by the district court that she was in fact not credible when she testified that she provided that much cash to the relationship then, right?
The The district court's order doesn't state whether or not there's a lack of credibility or, in its mind, perhaps a lack of sufficient tracing evidence, which is why in both briefs there's citations to cases about tracing. When there's no statement about a lack of credibility and there's evidence besides oral testimony supporting that there is that this money existed at that time, then in the argument of the appellant would be that there was sufficient evidence provided and that it was an abuse of discretion to not find that that money that was testified to.
Mr. Wallace, what is the, besides your client's testimony on this subject, what was the written, what was the documentation for it? Were there exhibits admitted into evidence that back up the number?
Yes.
Okay. Where would I find those exhibits? What are they?
Just a moment. I believe the brief provided citations to exhibits 1 through 11.
Thank you.
Yes. And I recall specifically that there are dated check registers that are contained with the exhibits, you know, frankly are voluminous because there were lengthy periods of time that were involved in the pendency of the divorce. The brief does contain more specific citations, as does the appellant's addendum, provide more specific citations to the exact page numbers. Specifically, there are check registers from the, as well as refinancing statements and oral testimony concerning that period of time that indicate that that money would have existed. And I believe under the court's precedence in Doering and Risk and things of that nature, that the tracing is sufficient. And so that's in the appellant's eyes, the abuse of discretion. Moving on to the valuation of the 2019 pickup truck, this appears to also be an abuse of discretion, as the district court found that the value of this vehicle was the same as the loan. There was never any testimony in the trial to support that valuation. The appellant provided her own valuation based on testimony as well as submitted exhibits that indicated her belief as to the value of that vehicle. The only mention of the respondent's belief about the value was in the respondent's submitted findings of fact and conclusions of law that were simultaneously submitted to the appellant's brief. Respondent did not testify that the vehicle was equal to the value of the loan. On the issue of dissipation, Your Honors, it's the appellant's position that the four factors in Peterson were met by the actions of the respondent in this particular case. It's important to emphasize the number is large, and it's a large number because of the respondent's income that was earned at that particular point in time, as well as the amount that he dissipated. The $136,000 that the appellant is seeking is one half of the total dissipation. It includes $43,000 in cash withdrawals that are not shown to have gone to any bank account or any asset that was disclosed during the pendency of the divorce. And it was over, and it's important to note that this dissipation is over and above the respondent's stated budget amount, and that this money was spent during the pendency of the divorce proceeding, and it was spent above and beyond the usual course of business and the ordinary necessities of life during the marriage.
And counsel, just to be clear, the district court did find that dissipation did occur. I understand your argument to be that you're disputing the amount that the district court granted your client. Correct. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. and that this the district court's failure to find the greater amount is, in the opinion of the appellant, an abuse of discretion, because the outcome in this particular case resulted in a windfall to the respondent to the detriment of the petitioner. On the issue of division of debt, the appellant's position is that equally dividing credit card debt, credit cards that were solely in the possession of the respondent and solely in the possession of and solely used for his benefit during the pendency of the divorce should have solely have been his responsibility as a matter of equity, given the differences in income, the differences in skills and ability to work. We would ask that the court remand this matter for further findings and order, as it may feel appropriate on the issue of spousal maintenance, a larger award for the same term. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing, and you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Bill Thompson, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Jason Tuttle. As the court sees in our brief, and as the court has highlighted here this morning, there's a couple of different issues that are going on. One is that the standard of review is abuse of discretion, and two, the district court is in the best position to determine credibility. I think it's appropriate to highlight finding 36, where the court does specifically take issue with the appellant's credibility, in that it was hard for the court to differentiate between what were legitimate claims and what were angry diatribes against my client. The simple fact is, Judge, I think we all know courts are placed in a difficult position here in these particular matters, especially in divorce situations where really every potential financial issue was in dispute in one way, shape, or form. The appellant in this particular matter has made a number of claims. And when you look at the appeal, it looks like almost every issue went against her. However, when you look at this case in totality, that simply is not true. She won the vast majority of the issues, and she just simply doesn't believe that those amounts were sufficient or enough. The court did consider.
Can I ask you on the spousal maintenance issue? I mean, she's actually getting less than she got for temporary spousal maintenance as part of her permanent spousal maintenance award. And it sounds like it's the amount is what's being contested here. Why was this not an abuse of discretion to award her less than what she was initially getting?
Well, I think there's a number. I mean, obviously, Judge, I can, or Your Honor, I can never get into Judge Johnson's head here. To specifically state that, all I can do is based upon my review of the findings. And I think there's a number of issues that are coming into play when it comes to the award of spousal maintenance. First and foremost, the appellant was awarded a large sum of her retirement in a non-marital claim. That amount, I think, of that retirement account, if I'm correct, was somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000 or $500,000. The majority of my clients' retirement accounts were then considered to be marital. And those are going to need to be divided once the court makes this final decision. Once that's done, her award is going to be substantially more than my client. Although, as Judge Connolly indicated, my client too is extremely close to the neighbor or the age of retirement himself. He is going to then need to recoup those monies at an even greater rate than he was prior to this divorce, because he's just simply got less time. I And I think the court, in looking at these things, while it cites that the petitioner or the appellant testified to certain disabilities and an inability to work, the court never made any specific findings that she was unable to try and supplement her own income as well.
Well, but can I stop you there, counsel? Because yes, I think on this issue, the district court found that she had expenses of roughly $5,000, and the parties don't dispute that, correct?
No, Judge, that was the court's finding.
And that she has a monthly income of about $1,160, again, not disputed. And the district court ended up for 10 years granting her spousal maintenance of $2,500. My rough calculation indicates that this is less than what is necessary to cover her monthly expenses for the period of 10 years. You're talking about retirement, but that's past the 10-year period. I want to focus on the 10-year period. Why isn't it an abuse of discretion when the district court is actually giving her a shortfall in terms of the spousal maintenance amount of $2,500?
Well, I think I understand what the court is saying, but I think it does tie into my argument, Judge, which is my client during that time not only needs to pay the issue of spousal maintenance, but he also needs to, during this time, recoup the monies that he will need for retirement as well. And once he retires, he's not going to be able to add to those amounts. And so during this 10-year period, he also is going to need to, in addition to paying spousal maintenance, also be recouping enough money for him to be able to successfully retire.
Well, but his income is substantially higher than appellant's income. I think we want to make sure. The argument that you're making, I'm not quite sure I'm buying it, because that's not part of what the district court found in terms of making its determination on spousal maintenance.
And I think that point that you're making, Judge, I think also goes to the dispute over what was or would be my client's income going forward. The appellant, and rightfully so, I don't fault them for making this argument, try to pinpoint, you know, what my client is currently making at this job at Compa Industries down in New Mexico, and had been there since roughly about, I think, 2018, 2019. But when you look at the entirety of his income and what he's actually really licensed to do, I think the court took and made specific findings, I think, looking at the entirety of my client's income throughout the marriage and not just simply what he is making now. In addition, my client testified on numerous occasions and in previous submissions at temporary hearings that job is not guaranteed for the remainder of his life. His actual initial contract to work for Compa Industries had expired, and now they're really just keeping him on a month-to-month basis. And so I believe that those were all issues that the court took into consideration when making this award. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Well, that seems to be a different argument than the prior argument that you made. But I'm still, you know, speaking only for myself, I'm still a little troubled that, as Judge Kuhn pointed out, this is actually less than what she had maintenance that she had for the temporary, but also that it seems to be the numbers don't add up. It's less than, it doesn't seem to be enough to cover her expenses. And as counsel for appellant points out, it's generally not expected that somebody is supposed to be dipping into savings or much less retirement accounts to try to maintain their modest standard of living.
Well, I'm not sure $5,000 a month in expenses is what I would consider to be modest. But that being said, I also think when you review the court's findings, there was no indication that the court made that Ms. or the appellant wasn't able to also supplement her own income at this point in time.
Let me switch that around. Is there any finding by the district court that states that she could supplement her income and
no judge
expected her to do so?
No, I judge mean, that.
Yeah, doesn't she have some physical limitations as well?
She made that argument, but the court did not make any specific findings that she was not disabled. Moreover, I believe...
I disagree with you because the district court did say petitioner, quote, petitioner is reaching retirement age and has testified to some failing conditions, parentheses, i.e. hip, knee, and back pain. She testified that she is unable to do much of the work at the home herself and relies on the generosity of others.
And that's where, on this particular point, Judge, I will have to make a similar argument that Mr. Wallace made. The judge cited her testimony, but did not make specific findings that they occurred or concurred with that. So I get it, and I'm not trying to mince words with you. I understand your position on that particular point. But I guess I would disagree with your assessment of it. But obviously, that's what you're here to do today. as far as the other issues, you know, I mean, unless we want to stay on the maintenance point, I did kind of want to hit on the other financial pieces. When it comes to like the homestead where she was alleging that she placed in $100,000 or $125,000 worth of non-marital claims into the homestead, I disagree that sufficient tracing was provided. It's hard in these particular matters, Judge, when you're sitting there on one hand arguing there was specific findings, that there wasn't specific findings, because we all know the district court is placed in a difficult position and could potentially on any divorce write, you know, 200-page novels when it comes to the findings. In this particular matter, the appellant alleged that she had $125,000 in cash. She provided check registers on that particular item, but never really provided any tracing that showed that those monies were actually put into the homestead. Yes, there was refinancings done. My client had just come out of a previous marriage, common to refinance following those marriages or a previous marriage, but there was really no evidence to ever show that those monies were placed into the homestead or created any type of non-marital claim. When we're dealing with cash, that's always a problem, because unless you have a stack of $100 bills with serial numbers that you can show that those were actually placed and used at a particular point in time, it's always harder. It's much easier when you're dealing with a homestead that gets sold. You can show one check going to another check or a separate account where there's withdrawals. But one, obviously my client disputed that there was that much cash lying around, and two, that there was actually appropriate tracing. The other issue, and I think
Mr.
that
Thompson, on the Mr. Wallace concedes that on this issue of the $100,000 to $125,000, that there were no bank statements. Now you both have referenced check registers, so I assume this is like, you know, a check register Mr. Wallace's client fills out that shows some money was sent. I mean, does it, and we'll take a look at those exhibits, but I guess the problem is she's filling this out. So who knows if you didn't find her credible, I imagine you didn't find her credible in terms of what she's filling out in the check register. But did any of those check register entries, you know, indicate, you know, $50,000 to Menards to buy supplies to fix up house? Were they just very vague?
Judge, to be perfectly honest with you, I do not know. I have not reviewed those probably since the time of the divorce.
That's trial. Fine. And he mentioned their exhibits 1 through 11, so we'll look at them.
But I would point out that you're 100% correct in that even if it did reference a $50,000 check to Menards, there was a number of other properties. The appellant herself had a property in Rib Lake, Wisconsin that was awarded to her that was non-marital. Even if it said to Menards, there's no way to know that that wasn't for her non-marital homestead versus or non-marital property or the actual homestead of my client or all of the other parcels that the parties did accumulate during the course of the marriage. And so that's where the issue of tracing really becomes problematic in this particular case. The quickly on the issue of personal property, when it comes to that truck, the one thing I want to highlight to the court awarded all of the personal property in the homestead at the time of the divorce decree to Ms. Tuttle. That included at that time property that was awarded that Ms. Tuttle was trying to give to my client. And so while even if the court finds that that truck issue was an abuse of discretion, I would ask the court simply to look at the other property that she would have been awarded because I believe she would have been compensated in other ways. Thank you, judges. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. On the issue of money into the homestead, I'd specifically point the court to exhibits 22, 24, and 26. I miscited my brief when I mentioned exhibits 1 through 11. It would be exhibits 22, 24, and 26. And I do think that those exhibits do address some of the issues raised by the Honorable Judge Connolly in your questioning. Both to me and to Mr. Thompson about tracing. And I would just comment further that tracing and the requirement of tracing is not intended to be necessarily precise. It can be relying on oral testimony only, and it can be supported by documentation as well. And in the issue in this particular case, The comment made by the district court about the appellant's angry diatribes versus legitimate grievances is a comment that's made after the motion to amend findings is filed. And there are issues raised in there and there are that are pointed out that are also relevant to a harassment restraining order that's not before the court and that was dismissed in the same hearing that was also the argument on the motion to amend. And so it's a order that reflects that hearing as well as the arguments made before the district court. And so I wanted to point that out. The issue of comp and the month-to-month basis raised by the respondent is specifically the issue that the appellant points out that has been constantly raised by the respondent and hasn't been supported. I think the court here sort of properly points out that the retirement, this 10-year period in between when the appellant's able to access the retirement accounts that are awarded to her, as well as the marital retirement accounts, is the relevant period. And it's that amount that's being contested. And regardless of whether or not she's awarded her own retirement accounts on a non-marital basis, and then the retirement accounts that were acquired during the marriage on a marital basis, she still doesn't have access to the same benefits that the appellant would have, the respondent would have, specifically his own increased income, as well as his own defined benefit pension plans and that are almost wholly non-marital for his benefit from his prior employment as a union electrician prior to and at the, I believe, at the very beginning of the marriage. And so there is significant retirement assets that he's receiving on a non-marital basis that are likely equivalent to what the appellant is receiving on her own. So your honors, I do appreciate and thank you on behalf of the appellant for your time and your consideration of this matter. Our request for relief is that the court order a increased duration to meet the reasonable monthly living expenses that are not in dispute, to ensure that expense against, or to ensure that award against calamity, as well as remand on the issues raised in the brief. And I would concede the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. We appreciate arguments by both attorneys and your briefing. We will be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.
Thank you, your honors.
Thank you, your honors.